All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Bobby Fenton with you, Super Bowl week edition, as we have come to the time that it all comes to an end. 272 regular season games, 13 playoff games, the 13th of which is this one. That's 285 games total in the 2025 NFL season, and the 285th is this one between the Chiefs and the Eagles in the Superdome in New Orleans for the World Championship of Professional Football. And I always say, guys, you know, we all have preferences. You might have been saying, oh, I don't want to see the Chiefs, and oh, I was rooting for the Bills to beat the Chiefs, or I wanted the Eagles out because I don't like the whatever it is. Fine. We all have our preferences. But there's one game every year that it all comes down to, and I don't care who the teams are. If your favorite sport is football, or even if it's not your favorite sport, but it's one of your favorite sports, it's a fun day, and it's a big day. And I can count on one hand, I don't know how many of you are like this, but I can count on one hand, even at age 44, when all the childlike wonder is gone and I'm more jaded and I've been through life more now than I was back when I was a kid or even a teenager, even today there's on, you know, a few, maybe like less than five sporting events that I wake up on the morning of that thing and I'm a little more excited just because that thing is that day. Like, you wake up and you're like, oh, it's Super Bowl Sunday today. Even if your team's not playing in it. The Super Bowl is one. For me, the Kentucky Derby is another. Like, I actually wake up excited on Derby Day. It's one of my favorite sporting events. That's not a team event. But the Super Bowl, Kentucky Derby, maybe Masters Sunday. Am I missing any? I mean, what else? I can't think of anything else where I get up that morning and I'm excited that it's that day in sports. And I love hockey, but if the Lightning aren't playing in the NHL, you know, in the Stanley Cup Final, I watch the Stanley Cup Final, I watch the World Series, I watch those things, but I'm not that excited about them. Oh, I know, another one I forgot. Actually, it's a few in the same event, the NCAA tournament. When I wake up on the Thursday morning of the first round of the NCAA tournament, I am, like, really excited, like, that day. And actually, it happens again for the Sweet 16. And the NCAA tournament's one of my favorites. I love the NCAA tournament. So that's four events, right? Super Bowl, Masters Sunday, Kentucky Derby, NCAA tournament. That handful of days in the year when I wake up, at least, and even if it has nothing to do with any of my favorite teams or anything like that, I'm like, here we go. It's that day. And the Super Bowl, probably at the top of that list. So I'm not that way. I told you this 2 weeks ago. I'm not one of those guys who says, oh, it's the Chiefs again. I'm so tired of the Chiefs and this and that. I'm fine with it. I mean, I was kind of rooting for the Bills on Championship Sunday because that fan base is so long-suffering, and it'd be nice to see them get a chance. I know they had the four in a row, obviously, 30 years ago, but lots happened since then. None of it pretty much good for the Bills. But you know what? They came up short. They came up short. They didn't get it done. The Chiefs are going for a lot of things that are very historical, and you may not care about that, and that's fine, but I'm not turned off just because the same team is in there over and over, just like I wasn't with the Patriots either. I mean, I'm fine with that. And if you look at what the Chiefs are going for in this game, not that it all rides on this game, what they've already accomplished is amazing, but the things that they would kind of cement with a win here, it rivals anything done in professional sports, let alone in the National Football League. We'll talk about it on the show today. The show is going to kind of be in two parts. The first part will be, and it's not going to be long parts in either case, but the first part we'll kind of get to. I'll go back and let's just kind of talk about where the Bucs are right now, now that this Liam Cohen thing has kind of settled and we've got a new offensive coordinator and all that stuff. Then we'll look at the Super Bowl itself, talk about this matchup and talk about the game. And then we'll get ready for the offseason, because that's all we got in front of us now besides that one game. And we'll talk about what you're going to do for the Super Bowl itself, the parties that people have, or maybe you're going to be at home or whatever it is. All that coming up on the show today. So first, let's set you up with how to contact me. Email bobbygameday@yahoo.com, B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, same thing, @bobbygameday, @bobbygameday. Easy to reach guy, no problem if you want to get a hold of me. So, talking about the Bucs, last time I did a show, because I didn't do one last week during the Super Bowl bye week, last time I did a show, I was recording live when the news came down that Liam Cohen had switched, because I was doing the, remember if you listened to it, if you haven't listened to it, I was doing the first part of the show talking about how great it was that we secured Liam Coe and that he wasn't going to go to Jacksonville, on and on and on. And then as I was saying those things, I'm on Twitter and I see, they changed it. He's going to Jacksonville now. So that show was kind of in two parts, even though it wasn't live. I kind of treated it like it was live. And at the time, the news was just coming in. There was a lot of speculation, and it was still kind of hard to say for sure what happened. Now that, like I said, the dust has settled, I know a lot of people are still kind of bent out of shape about how Liam Cohen handled it or this or that. And I'm here to tell you guys right now, folks, it really isn't that big of a deal. From a selfish standpoint, as a Bucks fan, of course I would like, whenever anything's going well, whenever anything is working, you want to keep it going. You don't want to mess with it, of course. But I totally get him taking the Jags job. I'm not losing any sleep over it. I'm not upset with Liam Cohen. Here's what you guys got to understand. The people that are really, truly upset. And I know there's some, you know, hazy things with the timeline. I'm still not totally sure what happened when, and there's been different reports. And I just don't care. Because at the end of the day, sports are very personal to us, okay? When you have a favorite team, in this case, the Buccaneers, for most of us listening, or whoever it is, especially if it's a long-time thing, and for me, something that goes back to my childhood, of course, that's very personal. But you still have to understand, these are jobs for the people participating. And the players and the coaches, I'm sure they, I mean, every once in a while you get guys who spend a long time in one place or spend their whole career in one place, and then when they retire, they stay in that city, and in some cases even stay around the team, or they become the radio color guy like Dave Moore, or whatever. And those people truly are people who care about the organization. They're fans of the same team that we are, just like we are. But for most of these guys, it's a job. And like Baker Mayfield, for I'm just using him as an example. If he goes on to stay here for like 10 more years and it becomes one of the all-time most beloved Buccaneers in history and his family settles here and all that, I hope that happens. I hope that happens. But Baker Mayfield got an opportunity here, and he took it. If that had been in Los Angeles with the Rams, or wherever else he had gone after he was with Cleveland, or if he had stayed in Carolina, then that would have been the play. You know, it's a job. Like, it's a job. And all of us have them, but most jobs aren't very personal, nor should they be. They're jobs. I mean, nobody is, like, really attached to Deloitte and Touche or Jabil or, you know, all these companies around. It's like, whatever, who cares? Like, I don't care. Like, I have friends who've worked for those companies and they move and work to, oh, my other friend works at, you know, Price Waterhouse. Okay, great. Now he moved over to this other place. Nobody gives a damn. Who cares? Why would you? Those aren't sports teams. Nobody is a fan of those. They're just companies that people use to have careers and make money and serve a need in the market, in the general public. But sports aren't like that for us. But for the people involved, they kind of still are. Like, if you're a player or a coach and you have a job with one team, you're there to do your job and you want to do well at it. And if it helps you get a promotion, even if that job is with another organization, then you go do it. Again, Liam Cohen, I understand, you know, maybe he didn't answer his phone when we thought he should have, or maybe he told the Bucks something the day before and then something shifted. At the end of the day, though, man, come on. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. It's not. I hope it doesn't hurt the Bucks. I mean, I do wish he was still the offensive coordinator for one more year. I have the utmost confidence in Grizzard, our new offensive coordinator, and there's no reason to believe he won't. You know, and they kept the continuity thing going, and that's great. But I'm just not going to spend any time being mad at Liam Cohen. It's simply not worth it. It's sports, but sports are still jobs. And a job should never be anything more. I mean, everybody's got their own criteria for what makes them happy in life, whether it's more money, whether it's stability, whether it's laying down roots, whether it's this, that, or the other. But it's a job for the players and the coaches and the people involved in the organization. And, you know, he had a chance to upgrade his job. He did. He was unable, and this is one thing. When I kind of knew we were staying in house with the offensive coordinator situation, was when, and necessarily, they might have done this anyway, even if they hadn't decided to stay in-house. But when it came out that they were not going to let the Jags even interview, like, random coaches, I'm not even talking about, like, Mike Greenberg, you know, the Bucks capologist and assistant GM, just guys off the staff, You know, I could maybe have seen them allowing that if they were planning on bringing in a new offensive coordinator anyway, like an outside offensive coordinator who maybe had their own offensive line coach and their own this and their own that. But when they said no to the Jags taking even a look at anybody else, I thought, hey, they might be looking at Grizzard because they want to keep everything as continuous as they can. And so Josh Grizzard is the new Bucs OC. He's got the endorsement of a lot of people. None of those things actually matter. I mean, everybody, you're not going to hear people come out and say, oh, wow, I used to coach with him, and I didn't think he'd ever make it, honestly. You know, people are going to say, oh, this guy, I knew it from the beginning. He had OC written all over him, future head coach. So all those things are great. We won't know until we see the team in action. But I think under the circumstances, the Bucs did a pretty good thing. And so now attention turns to what kind of offseason additions they can make or what kind of offseason retentions they can make for people who are already here that may be threatening to leave. I know the Myles Garrett thing is out there after he's demanded a trade from Cleveland, and his list just came out today of preferred teams that he'd be open to being traded to. The Bucs were on that list. So that raised some eyebrows, and hey, I wouldn't blame the Bucs at all for making a move. And my son was asking me, you know, it's fun having a son. It's fun having children. My daughter, too, asked me these things. It's fun having them because they ask these questions and you get to kind of explain it. And then while you're explaining it to them, you're kind of educating yourself as well. So my son's like, hey, well, we should get Myles Garrett, right? I mean, we need a pass rush. Let's get him. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course I want Myles Garrett. But, like, you got to think. He's not going to be, you know, cheap, right? I told him, I was like, what do you think the Bucs would have to do to get him? He's like, oh, I don't know, just get him. I'm like, yeah, just get him. Fans say that. But, like, and I'm not sure what the price tag will be, but it's going to be hefty. It's going to be draft picks that you want to help build your team in the future. And I explained to him, I was like, you know, GMs have to walk a fine line because right now is always the most important thing. The next game, the next season, you know, the next Super Bowl. Right now, right now, right now. But once right now passes, there's a new right now. And if you miss on this right now that just took place, are you ready for your next right now? And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, if you're going to make a move for a guy like that and give up a lot of things that you were going to use to help your team in the future, it's got to be because you think that he might be the difference that can get you where you want to be right now. Not just maybe. It's always maybe, of course, because nobody knows for sure. But you got to feel like, you know, we're close, and this could put us over the edge. And honestly, the Bucs may be like that because the Bucs, I mean, I've told you all this before. I mean, the Bucs are in good position. They're in a division that's getting better. It's not going to be as easy next year as it has been the past couple years, but still not in exactly what you'd say is a murderer's row. They've got an offense with every, you know, a lot of people returning, and they should be a top 10 offense again. They've got some continuity in the system. Baker Mayfield's back for a third season. We'll see about Godwin, but I mean, the offensive line should be good. The running backs, there should be every level of the offense. We've got people in place that we feel like, or I would think, I say we, but I'm not in the Bucs front office. I think they should feel like, you know, we're in a good spot right now. We're not really looking to change much there. And on defense, there are things that need to be improved, but also injuries that are going to help the team get better. They'll make some additions in the offseason, but pass rush has been a glaring part of the deficiencies on defense. And I think the lack of a pass rush, in addition to, again, all the injuries, has made us be harder on the secondary than maybe we deserve. Not that they didn't deserve criticism, they did, but when you can't rush the passer, you make life real hard on those guys. So the Bucs may actually be in that position where it is worth giving up something that you were going to really wish you had down the road. I'm talking about first-round draft picks and things like that. So that's what it's going to take to get a guy like Myles Garrett. And, of course, the Browns say, oh, we're not interested in trading him. Of course they're going to say that because that makes the price go high. Well, no, okay, maybe if you give us three first-rounders and your firstborn kid, then, okay, maybe then we'll talk about it. But otherwise, we're not interested. You know, they're not going to say, oh, hell yes, we're looking to trade him. That gets the number down. But I told my son, you know, you have to weigh that as a GM because if you make this trade and it helps you a little bit, but you're really just kind of 10-7 or 9-8 again and you lose in the first round of the playoffs, only now you've given up a bunch of the draft picks you wish you had, and then it kind of backfires. So we'll see. Again, I don't feel like the Bucs are the team it's going to end up eventually being, but didn't hurt seeing their name on that list that came out. And so we go into the offseason looking at that, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about it. You know, free agency, the combine, the draft, all those things are coming up after the Super Bowl. We'll worry about this, that after the Super Bowl. But it is Super Bowl weekend. And so that's my focus right now, and I kind of talk about this every year, but the Super Bowl, and I'm still up in the air right now. I don't know what I'm doing on Sunday. I've got a couple people I know having different parties, and I've got the chance to obviously just stay at my house and just watch it on my own, or even have a couple people over to my house, but then some of those same people might be going to some of the other party. You know, it's fun in a way to have a routine where every year this is what I do for Super Bowl, whether it's a friend who throws a big party every year or you yourself who does it or whatever. But I'm going to tell you this right now. When it comes to Super Bowl parties, and everybody's different, but if you're listening to this show, you're probably at least a fairly hardcore football fan. I like to watch the actual Super Bowl. So I think that the more people at a party, the returns start diminishing. I don't like to watch it alone, but I want the party in that range of like maybe 6 to 12 people who are all pretty close and all people who share a mutual interest in football. Basically, I don't want to be sitting next to some dude I don't know that well, but I know well enough that I have to talk to him, and then he wants to watch the commercials more than he wants to watch the game. Get that all the way out of here. I don't want that for the Super Bowl. And these big parties tend to have that. And I call them catch-up people, because you know these people. And you are a catch-up person to somebody else in your life. They're people who you know. You're not friends with them. You don't really talk to them that much. You might see him once or twice a year at various functions. It's always maybe through another person you know, and you and this catch-up person aren't close enough on your own. You would never hang out with this person alone. It's always because another buddy of yours is also friends with them, that type of thing. And I call them catch-up people because when you see them, you have to catch up. Oh, hey, how's so-and-so? The kids, how old's your kid now? Oh, your kid's in sixth grade? Wow, it seems like he was in second grade last time I saw you. Time flies. All the cliches, all the small talk. Those are catch-up people. There's tons of those people at a Super Bowl party of more than like 10 people. Like when you get to like 15, 20 people and it's at somebody you know's house or whatever, you're going to run into a lot of catch-up people. So you can't be like a dick and just stare at the TV and ignore them. But yet, you know, this is kind of like, I want people that I know well enough to say, hey, what's up? And then we're immediately into it. We're watching the game. We're making jokes and inside jokes and comments, and we've watched football together before. That's, to me, when it's at its best, when it's rolling. You know, when you have a group that size, you know, fairly intimate, it's okay to get it close to 10 people, but any more than that, it starts to get a little bit, and it depends on who the group is. You might have a really, really big group of close friends. I have a decently sized group of close friends, but not like 20 people worth where I'm like gonna, so I know a few people having parties. One of them is a group of people who I see pretty routinely, which is good. We can just go right into it and have fun watching the game, and nobody's got to catch up, as I say. But I don't want to be around people who are watching it for the commercials. I don't mind chicks who are more interested in the halftime show than the game. A couple of those are okay. But the commercial people really buy. I could not possibly care less about the Super Bowl commercials. And when people say, you always hear that one douchebag who's like, oh, I just want to see the commercials. I don't really care about the game. Fine, you know, go read Cosmo and hang out with your friend. I don't need you here for this. Because we're talking about two of the best teams in the NFL, probably the two best teams in the NFL. Actually, not probably, they are. And certainly in the Chiefs' case, maybe one of the best teams in the history of the NFL. Here's what the Chiefs are going for. Like it or not, respect it, here's what they're going for. Obviously going for three straight Super Bowls for the first time ever. They would be 4-1. So not just the three in a row, but they would be 4-1 in the Super Bowl in a six-year span with a win. And that one, of course, we all remember, 31-9. One of my greatest nights ever as a sports fan. But still, they would be 4-1 in a six-year span. They have reached all... listen to this. This is what even almost is more amazing than the Super Bowls. The Chiefs have reached overtime of the AFC Championship game or further for seven straight years. They've won five of them, and the two they lost were both in overtime. And if it hadn't been for D Ford lining up offside back in, was it 2018? 2019? It was 2018. Then they've been the Super Bowl for six of the last 7 years. Although that also, if you look back then, they may not have hired Steve Spagnuolo, because that was after that happened when they hired Spags. And that's a big reason why they've been to the, you know, ensuing five Super Bowls. But anyway, going for three straight. would be 4-1 in a 6-year span, have reached OT or better of the AFC Championship game 7 straight years. And all these things condensed into, I mean, what the Patriots did was kind of spread out, and they had like a 10-year period there where they didn't go to the Super Bowl, which in some ways is more amazing what Brady was able to do. But all that is on the line for the Chiefs. And then there's all these staggering numbers in these stats that blow my mind. The Chiefs, it'd be one thing if they were lucky, but I don't think they've had a particular amount of luck. I know people are going to say the calls and this and that, and there's been a few of those. But over this entire run, I don't feel like they've been particularly lucky. I really don't. But, you know, it's not like there's been fluky wins. In fact, the Chiefs have won 8 straight games without getting a turnover. And let me tell you this, too. This is crazy. The Chiefs have gone 3 straight games right now, currently in a streak of 3 straight games without forcing a turnover. In their franchise history, okay, they have never gone 4 games without forcing a turnover. And I don't know if they're going to get one or not on Sunday, but it is possible for the Chiefs to both set a franchise record for longest futility streak in forcing a turnover while winning the Super Bowl. They could do that. Like, they could both set the team record for longest streak without getting any takeaways while also making that a playoff run of 3 games to win the Super Bowl. That's insane. So it's not like they're getting fluky, you know, fumble luck or some tip balls or just turnover luck. Because turnover luck is, it's not all luck. Turnovers are forced a lot of the time. But they're a highly volatile statistic. They are more random than people give them credit for. And in fact, if you're looking for like a little stat that you can kind of glean something off of, this guy Scott Kazmar, who writes on Twitter a lot of, he's real in the weeds stuff about the NFL. But he came up with a stat called fraud alert rating, FAR, if you want to call it F-A-R. And it doesn't mean teams are frauds, but fraud alert rating basically just rates teams on 3 categories. And 2 of the main categories are turnover differential and starting field position. Oh, and strength of schedule is the 3rd one. So when a team basically ranks high in the fraud alert scale, they've got a very high turnover differential. Remember, turnovers are more random than you think, and they regress to the mean, usually. And over a small sample size, for example, 1 game, which the Super Bowl is, they don't correlate to what's happened the rest of the season. Like, if you have a good rushing offense or a good passing defense or whatever for your 19, 18 games or before the Super Bowl, then you have those things for the Super Bowl itself. You have that good rushing offense or you have that good passing defense. But if you have a plus 15 turnover ratio in the regular season, the other team has a plus 2, you don't really have that advantage in the game. It's 1 game. For that 1 game, who knows what the hell could happen. So teams that are where they are on the strength of getting a lot of turnovers and thus having really good starting field position tend to be not necessarily lucky, but their success isn't necessarily as stable as a team who hasn't had those advantages. So in this Super Bowl, the Chiefs rank pretty low on the fraud alert scale. They haven't had any real luck, whereas the Eagles have a very high turnover ratio. They've had very good starting field position all year, and they've benefited from some things that maybe they didn't necessarily create, is how the fraud alert. And that scale, if you look at the fraud alert thing this guy wrote, if you go on Twitter to his Twitter account, you can see that the team with a higher fraud alert rating loses most of the time, regardless of the point spread, although the point spread in this one's only 1.5 anyway. And actually, it's even more accurate when the point spread is narrower, like when it's a field goal or less, the fraud alert scale tends to be a good indicator. So that's one thing in favor of the Chiefs. Doesn't mean it'll apply to this game. I mean, the Eagles could go out and win. I'm not saying that. But it's hard to bet against the Chiefs at this point. And I did it. I really thought Buffalo's time was now. I really thought they were going to come through and get it done. And they had the chance to do it. And the Chiefs made a play when they had to over and over again. Yes, okay, there was some luck there. I think Josh Allen got the first down. We'll never be able to go back and replay the game and see what would have happened if he had been ruled over the line or whatever. That was a really big play. Oh, and let me stop for a second real quick. Just let me address that. I'm not going to go back and rehash something from 2 weeks ago. But the general idea, because I saw so much chatter on Twitter, people complaining about this and that with the spotting of the ball. If I hear another person say, oh my God, it's a billion-dollar industry. How are we still spotting the ball and measuring with sticks? We need lasers and chips and this and that and the other. It's ridiculous. Folks, God Almighty, we've talked about this. We can figure out where the ball is, no problem, okay? They can put chips, they can do this and that. They can get rid of the sticks and have a laser eye that points across. That we know they can do that. Spotting the ball is still random. So it actually may help a little bit on a forward progress type thing because you're only trying to figure out how far the ball got. But on your typical play, it's not how far, it's where was the ball at the exact moment the player was down. And that is still a judgment call by the referee. Like, you can't have a sensor that tells you right when his knee touched or when any other part of his body besides his hand or his foot touched. So, you know, maybe at the goal line, you could, like I said, a forward progress, did the ball go over the goal line? You could probably do that. It might help a little bit. But on the whole, that's not the reason. It's just a very, very hard thing to do. There's been a few Twitter threads about it, if you care to find them, explain why this isn't really that doable. It's not like tennis, where the only thing that matters is where that ball hit, in or out. That's a black and white thing that, yes, you can get computers to do that. But there are a million moving parts to a football play and where the play actually ended and when the play actually ended that go beyond just, oh, we don't want to spend enough money on it. I'm sure the NFL would have no problem spending money on it if it actually would fix the problem, but it doesn't, because you have to know when that guy is down. You have to know where this and that is. And on the Josh Allen play in particular, like that we're actually talking about here, it may have made a little bit of a difference because we just need to know how far the ball got. He never actually did go down. They, like, you know, stood him up in forward progress stopped. So that type of thing, maybe. But, I mean, it's really not that big of an issue. Neither are the sticks. The laser is just going to be placed where the stick already is. So, I mean, I think the drama of the sticks running on the field, them stretching the chains out, they might like that a little bit, but it wouldn't change any results. Spotting the football is the hard part, and there's no way to get a laser to tell you the microsecond when the player was down by contact and where the ball was at that microsecond. That's the hard part. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. It's in the past now. The Chiefs got it done. The Bills didn't, and the Bills had the ball in their hand with a chance to win after that. And so, hey, here we are. Fine. I'm fine with it. Like, I'm not a Chiefs fan. I don't hate them. I always say that I don't really have a lot of biases when it comes to the NFL besides being a Bucs fan. Like, in my mind, there are 32 teams. The Buccaneers are mine, and the other 31 are what I don't really care. Obviously, you want your division rivals to do poorly because it helps you. You want anybody to do poorly if it helps your team. But when it has no effect on the Bucs either way, I don't often, I prefer this team or I don't care. I mean, I just want to see a good game on Sunday. I think it will be. The Chiefs and Eagles have actually played each of the last four seasons, which is crazy because obviously teams in different conferences don't play that often, usually once every 4 years. But in this case, they played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Plus, they played in the regular season twice. Once was on the normal cycle, and the other one was since they added the 17th game, you play another team in the other conference. So we actually have a little bit of history here between these two teams with this group of players, and the Chiefs won two out of those three, including obviously the Super Bowl, which was in Glendale a couple years ago. And that Super Bowl, if you remember, was so bad with the field. They really, really screwed up with the field. I think they watered it, but they didn't put it outside. Like, I think they watered it and had it inside, and the water never burned off, and I think that was the big thing. But that Super Bowl, to me, I know it's the same for both teams, but it really, really almost nullifies anything that you couldn't tell anything. I mean, everybody was slipping all over the place, so it shouldn't be any issues like that in the Dome on Sunday. 6:30 kickoff between the Eagles and Chiefs, and of course the winner, the professional football champion of the world. You don't need anything else than that, in my opinion. If you're into the gambling, over-under is 48.5. And like I said, Kansas City, a 1.5-point favorite, basically a coin flip. And I give the Eagles a chance in this game. I mean, when you have a chance to run the ball like the Eagles can with Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts, you know, in his second Super Bowl now, the first one could have gone either way, just like so many of these Chiefs games feel like they could go either way, but they always feel like they come out on the end of the Chiefs. That will not happen forever. Their winning streak in one-score games won't continue forever. All these streaks I told you about, all the turnover stuff. Here's another one. This is Super Bowl 59. All 58 Super Bowl winners, all 58 before this year, had at least three takeaways during the postseason at some point. Chiefs have had none so far. Now, they could win and get three, or they could lose, and the Eagles, of course, would then qualify. They've already got three takeaways. We don't know what's going to happen. But just another tidbit I thought I would throw out there. So enjoy it. Have fun. Like I said, choose wisely whatever you end up doing for the game, whatever people you choose to spend time with, or nobody at all. I mean, whatever it is, I hope you have a great time. I intend to have a good time. I know my son, it's a lot of his baseball buddies and school buddies that'll be there. And for the kids, that's great. And for the rest of us, man, one more to go. 3 hours of football. The next time there'll be a football game that counts after Sunday is going to be August, okay? 7 months from now. So I wouldn't wish any of it away if I were you. I don't plan to. But either way, I want to thank the Joes. JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, radio, internet, for Bucks coverage. And I want to thank them for giving me the platform to get out in front of you. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend, whatever your plans are. The night parade Saturday night in Ybor, the Super Bowl on Sunday. Lots of fun to be had. Be safe, have fun. And no matter who wins the Super Bowl, remember, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.